Well, good evening, everyone. Always a pleasure to see you here. Never know who will be here. And it's always a very happy moment when I click launch Zoom and I arrive and there you are. Today, I came across an article in which the writer said that the word Chan, which is the Chinese word that has been translated into Japanese Zen. And so here we are with our Zen group practicing Zen meditation, wearing Zen paraphernalia, listening to a Zen talk by a Zen teacher. And this is a Japanese word that comes from a Chinese word, and the Chinese word comes from a Sanskrit word. And this guy who was writing the article said that Chan was it's a transliteration of the word dhyana in Sanskrit. And this is a guy who was writing the article is a specialist in Chinese and said that the ideogram that represents Chan, the word Chan in Chinese, originally meant altar. And this, we kind of have to make a leap and I'll kind of go into my interpretation of it. So it originally meant altar and, I wrote it down, sacrifice to rivers and mountains. So I read the article, so I have a little more information about this than you. So I will put it in my words what in Sanskrit is dhyana, what we call Zen, dhyana being a meditative state, more or less, something like that. I won't go into the details of that meaning in Sanskrit, but this meditation that we do, what we call Zen meditation, is a sacrifice to the mountains and rivers and mountains. As in, and this is from the article I read, he says, as in meditation is a place where one honors landscape, the wildness without and within. So here we are back to wild and the wild flowers that we are. And the name of our Zen Sangha is Wild Flower. And we talked about, Joa mentioned wild the other day in a talk, and we then pursued it since then. And it's something that I often talk about, wildness. This is the first time I've seen it in this way, but it makes absolute sense to me. And that the sacrifice to rivers and mountains, in Chinese thought, what I interpreted is returning oneself to the wildness. That's what our meditation is. We return our presence, our consciousness, our awareness to the wildness within us and without, to the rivers and mountains, the landscape. before it is touched, before it has become identified with all the stuff that we identify with. And our practice is to just sit and let things be, right? So the wildness would be, I often use that image of the shaking the jar with water that has dirt in it, muddy water. You put down the jar and the mud and the dirt settles to the bottom and the water's clear. So, but if we move it, if we're moving it, we're not allowing it to be in its original state. We're not allowing it to return to its wildness, let's say, something like that. So now why am I bringing this up today? Because I feel that so much of what is happening in our world is happening because of the turning away from the wildness instead of turning towards it and being with it. And something that particularly had affected me today, in just because of my personal story, one of Trump's associates, Rudy Giuliani, who became ill with the COVID virus a few days ago, was rushed to hospital and emerged today in perfect health and said, you know, it's amazing. I went in seriously ill on Monday. And as soon as they gave me the treatment, they gave me the same treatment that Trump got. These two rare, extremely rare treatments that very few people have access to. As soon as they gave it to me, I was fine. And he said, if I hadn't had those treatments, I might have died. And he even had the gall to say, if I wasn't a celebrity, I wouldn't have even been in that hospital. And I wouldn't have received those treatments. And this, when I first read this morning, I was very upset and angry. Having been very ill myself and recovered, but beyond my own case, almost 300,000 people in the United States have died. Millions have been infected, thousands and thousands are hospitalized. And the only people getting this special treatment are the famous people, celebrities, the rich and powerful, right? And this really upset me. And so I stayed with it as a koan, which is always what I do, just automatically. When I find myself, tossed and turned with upheaval and upset or angry or something. And our koan practice is about returning to that, I forgot what I said, that original consciousness, that original awareness, the original sacrifice to mountains and rivers, right? Before we've identified everything. It's what, sometimes we call this Buddha nature. I prefer to say, the true nature of all things. It's what we share. It's where we all come from. It's what we all are. When I say come from, it's that everything emerges from that. Everything is a manifestation of that nature. So whether it's the glass of water, my telephone, the pencil, Rudy Giuliani, the COVID virus, the guy walking down the street by my window every day whistling. Everything is a manifestation of this nature, this basic nature of all things. We talk about this all the time in Zen practice, and you know, most of the time it's conceptual and you probably don't know what I'm talking about. But this is the wild. This is wildness is another word for it. Okay. So koans bring us, the practice of koans, bring us to inhabiting or dwelling or staying with that wildness. Because from there, we can then respond to whatever arises. So that's why I say when I find myself shaken up or upset about something like this today, this morning when I read this, angry, angry at the injustice, the inequity, the tragedy that this inequity and injustice causes. And I know the origin of it. I know where it comes from, that injustice and that inequity. And so when I find myself encountering something like that, I return, I say I take it as a koan. It's just a concept to say take it as a koan. I practice this coming back to, this returning to the wild. And this helps me. I've learned throughout this practice, what I've learned from my koan practice and what I continue to learn is how to respond from that place. So how to respond not from my ideas and positions and beliefs and fixed identities, but to respond from the wildness, to respond from this basic nature. And then, so what does that mean? You know, it's in Bernie Glassman's jargon, it's we start with not knowing. So that means to sacrifice oneself to the mountains and rivers, right? That means to return to this place before we know things, before we have a fixed idea about them, before we have opinions. And then once we've done that, then we bear witness, Bernie says. Then we just see what's there. So then I can just look at Rudy Giuliani and his getting this treatment and recovering miraculously in 3 days. And without what I had before, judgments and anger and righteousness. So I just receive it. And then, in Bernie's terminology, it's respond with appropriate action. And that's where I say in throughout my practice and throughout our practice together in the koan practice, we learn how to respond from this. Sometimes we say no mind. Sometimes we say ordinary mind. Sometimes we say original mind. Sometimes we say from the heart, lots of different terms for it, but they all refer to the same returning to the original source or something like that. And so what does that mean then? In my example of Rudy Giuliani, well, it means that I could, or I can, more easily remain in the compassionate space. Remain in the place of seeing the origin of that behavior, and not just Rudy Giuliani, but the multitudes of us and all of the multitudes of things that we do that are just like that. That result in inequity, inequality, injustice, pain, suffering, harm, whatever. And I can, so then I can see the root of it. I know where that comes from. And it comes from not being in touch with this basic nature. It comes from that. The manifestation of not being in touch with this basic nature is that. That's what arises from the basic nature when we are not in touch with the basic nature. So this same basic nature that gives rise to awakening also gives rise to delusion. Because every manifestation, and I'm using manifestation in just like this vast, you know, umbrella term. Everything, every phenomenon, the 10,000 things we say, are manifestations of this universal nature, this universal tissue, let's say, or fabric, maybe, you know, let's say. So people getting special treatment and other people dying because they don't have that treatment, those are both manifestations of this same basic nature of things. Seeing that for me today was helpful. It doesn't resolve the situation. It makes me more aware of when in myself I might do that kind of thing. Certainly, probably, I mean, I can't fault Rudy Giuliani for receiving that treatment, because I would have taken the treatment if it had been offered to me. I don't think it would have ever been offered to me, because supposedly it's a treatment that you have to be in a really bad, bad state in order to get it. And I don't think I would have qualified. I'm also not an old man. Rudy Giuliani's 76, Donald Trump's 74. So I'm not in that risk category. I'm not overweight. Those guys are. You know, they probably have underlying health issues too. And so, in any way, if it had been offered, of course I would have taken it. You know, but that's not really the point of what I'm trying to say. The point is, it's the issue is much simpler and much greater than Rudy Giuliani receiving special treatment. It's symbolic of what I'm talking about, but it's not really the ultimate. It's much vaster than that, and it's much simpler than that. It comes back to our practice of sitting here and returning to the wildness. That's how simple, that's the simple, the simplicity of it. The vastness of it is the infinite number of manifestations of this problem. Problem in the sense of attachment to this, to our ideas, not being awakened to our basic nature, and therefore the nature of others. Because if you are aware of your nature, then you are aware of the nature of others, and you see that we are all one. And then therefore we have, you know, what we call ethical conduct, that we've developed as a means of kind of giving ourselves a roadmap But we don't really need that roadmap if we're in touch with our fundamental, basic nature. Of course, we forget it though. And so then we do need the roadmap to remind us. And, you know, I read in these articles today that doctors in the United States, I don't know how it is elsewhere, because I don't know how advanced these treatments are in other countries, but these are basically synthetic antibody treatments that are being given so that the immune system is boosted to fight off the virus. But they're very difficult. It's not an easy thing to make these synthetic antibodies. And so they're limited for the moment. And the medical community in the United States is being asked to ration this treatment. And in some places, they're doing it by a lottery system. So people, you know, there might be 15 people who need the treatment and they only have enough for two. And so they draw numbers. And the two people who get, and from doctors, this is a real difficult ethical question, issue. How do you decide who gets the treatment and who doesn't? And so they've started this lottery system in some places so that it won't be just the rich and powerful who get it. So that it's not based on, you know, what connections you have. Although clearly it still is for some people, right? So, but doctors have an ethical code of conduct that keeps them, that helps them see how to behave. You know, I think most of them in their hearts, they know how to behave. That's what they've devoted their life to, is healing. And yet they still have a code of ethical conduct. We have a code, we have codes of conduct, you know, we have the precepts that say, I vow to refrain from killing, or I vow to refrain from lying, I vow to refrain from stealing. These things that we, behavior that we know is harmful, and we don't want to promote it or indulge in it. At the same time, we know that we will. And so we say that my intention is to vow from refraining from this. My intention is to not kill. My intention is to not lie, steal. And yet, I have to kill to stay alive. In order for my cells to regenerate in my body, other cells have to die. In order to stay alive, I need to eat. And so I'm killing plants or animals. So we know that this will happen, but how do we limit it? So how do we live our lives by doing the least harm possible? By, I think what the word wholeness or wholesomeness or something, I think Joel was using the other day. So how do we live so that we minimize the suffering, say, that we will cause? In our practice, the response is, well, we sit here and we return to the wild. Because in that wild, in that wildness, that's before harm. That's things in their natural state, let's say, in their natural functioning, natural in the sense of ordinary functioning before we've interfered with it. I went for a walk this afternoon in a big park not far from my home, and they've returned a part of the park to its wild state, meaning that they've stopped, I'm assuming it's cultivated wildness, but it, in any case, it doesn't look like the other parts of the park. And they, I guess it's not the season, but they had posted that they have goats and sheep that will be in there to like take care of part of the wildness to take care of the wildness or something. And it was a very different feel than the other side of the walkway that I was on, which was, you know, there was a football field and there was a pathway and the plants and trees and grass were trimmed and obviously cultivated to look a certain way. Whereas on the other side of the pathway, it was wild, what we think of as wild. And that's kind of an example of what we mean. So we live our lives in this manicured lawn, right? Which sometimes is very messy. This well-tended lawn of our garden with everything trimmed just right. Or at least we're trying to keep it trimmed just right. And yet, really, if we return to the wildness, that's why I called our Sangha the Wildflower Sangha, because it's about returning to that, the wildflowers, the wildness grows everywhere. It cannot be held back. Even the part of the park that is very well tended and trimmed is an expression of the wildness. It's just that version of wildness that's being expressed. And when we can see that, this changes then our experience of the world and how we move in the world and how we behave. Because we see that wildness within us, the landscape within us, the mountains and rivers within ourselves, and the mountains and rivers outside of us. And that wildness is the altar. Comes back to this Chinese ideogram of the altar. You know, in some of our literature on the website and stuff, I forget exactly what it is, you know, we say the earth is our altar, we say, I think. The universe is our zendo and the earth is our altar. When I wrote that, I didn't know that the ideogram in Chinese for the word chan was altar, but it makes perfect sense to me. It's like, oh yeah, of course it is, because this is the altar. This is the sacred space. Where you are sitting right now is a sacred space. And the room you're in is the wild landscape. And whatever's happening inside of you is an expression of that wildness within you. So all of that helped me to remain a, you know, we have this koan of an unmovable tree in a big storm, right? In a heavy storm. And so coming back to this today, coming upon this little thing about Chan and Zen and the altar, helped me to remain an immovable tree in this heavy storm of disrupt that disrupted me when I read this article about Rudy Giuliani and the COVID treatment. I might add that I also had a test the day before yesterday that revealed I have tons and tons of antibodies to protect me against COVID because I was sick, right? But this is the wild antibodies, right? These aren't antibodies coming from the outside, artificially manufactured. I have the wild antibodies. Sounds funny to even say I have, but part of the wild within me is manifesting as those antibodies, right? And so it's kind of like the way of all things. It's kind of like the karmic play of the cosmos. And sometimes it's tragic. You know, I think about the people who have died who didn't have those antibodies, whose bodies were not able to build those antibodies. Mine struggled mightily at one point to make them. But sometimes it's tragic, you know. Sometimes it's joyous. The expressions of the wild are infinite. And we are able to fully receive those expressions, welcome them, be touched by them, when we encounter the basic underlying cosmos, or whatever you want to call it, nature, of which they are an expression. It changes everything. Changes just this moment of being alive, ultimately. So that was a lot. I think maybe we should just stay with the Dhyana Chan Zen, and Chan, the ideogram of Chan being altar and the reminding us of the meditation being about honoring the landscape, whatever it is, however it presents itself. I would like to hear what you have to say. Questions, comments. Whatever that brings up for you or not. João?
Good evening. All the while you were talking, I had the second vow and present. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Which usually I have some difficulty, let's say, about this. And I know there are all kinds of translations. Transform them, I vow to transform them. But the way we say it, I vow to put an end to them. And I guess I always, again, the difficulty comes from seeing it as a whole, put an end to them, like the, it's like sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them. And in French, it's I vow to save them all. Sauvetus. And in a way, you were talking about the uniqueness, I think, of each, and also of each illusion, delusion, actually, mm-hmm. uniqueness of each delusion. And the altar, I don't know where it comes from, but sometimes I don't know if it's in the story, nothing is, I don't know if it's because of Bodhidharma when he meets the emperor, I'm not sure, nothing sacred, vast emptiness, nothing sacred, but sometimes you say nothing is sacred, therefore everything, each, but everything, the way I see it, it's each thing. Nothing is special, therefore everything is each thing, it's each person, each is special, it's is sacred. And I was with this second vow, delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. I'm sorry, I was just thank you.
That's first the Bodhidharma situation that you mentioned. When Bodhidharma says that, because it's in response to a question where the emperor asks him, what is the essential teaching or something? And he says, nothing sacred, vast emptiness. That's just another word for wildness. He's referring to this, which is really interesting. You know, I hadn't thought of that, but everywhere we turn in our literature, in our practice, we find this. He's referring exactly to this. To the basic, the wild landscape within and without. And then in terms of the delusions, so what does that mean? We, you know, it's like with all the vows, it's this really complicated thing where it seems impossible, right? You know, if they're inexhaustible, how can I put an end to them, right? Well, we put an end to them by seeing the root, you know, seeing through them. And being one with them, like that's another part of our jargon. And in French, yes, it is, because it does say all, but only because for the chanting purposes, they had to add that word. or something like that, because I can't remember. What is it?
Je fais le vœu de le sauver tous. Yes, it's because right. of the rhythm. I'm pretty certain it's because of that.
Because when we were translating it had to work that way. But it doesn't matter. You know, it's an interesting, words matter. You know, so it is interesting to hear that. And in Portuguese, how would we translate it?
We've said it inextinguíveis são as ilusões, faço voto de lhes pôr fim.
So you don't have the all.
Not, you don't have the all, no, because of rhythm purposes, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, João, that was the second vow, not the first one.
Delusions. Inextinguíveis são as ilusões, é o segundo. Inextinguíveis são as ilusões. Faço o voto de lhes pôr fim.
Yes, but the O, I think, comes on the first vowel.
Yeah, but in French, the second has tous. I think so.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Now, Lisa's saying no. All right, guys, who knows the vowels in French?
I know. Innombrables sont les êtres vivants, je fais le vœu de les sauver tous. Yes. Inépuisables sont les illusions, je fais le vœu d'y mettre fin.
So it's in the first one where it's...
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where I got this. But
same anyway. Explanation, though, you know, yeah. The same that. So you're trying to put an end to all the delusions, whether we say it all or not. Let's say. Joa?
Yes. two thoughts. One is when you mentioned that returning oneself to wilderness, it reminded me of the fact that this pandemic is said to be caused because we domesticated too much the wilderness. So I thought there was, that's one thought. And the other one is domesticated the wilderness, and at the same time, what might seem as a paradox is that we keep talking about taming the mind. But in fact, the taming is really the taming to go back to the wilderness. And it reminded me of I have in mind the all these iconography of this that characterizes the path with a monkey or sometimes the monkey also the ox or sometimes, but the ultimate phase is really the taming. Well, I mean the character is walking next to the monkey, I think, or the animal, or the ox, or whatever that the animal is. So it's really being able, you tame it in order to really go back to the wilderness.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know so much about the monkey image, but the, you know, the ox herding pictures I'm more familiar with, yeah.
And I think in the Indian tradition, I wonder if it's not an elephant, but it's always that idea that they climb on it and then they're walking next to it. And I mean, just ultimately, you know, you tame it, but it's so tamed that you can walk next to your mind and it doesn't bother you anymore.
Hmm. Or as Matthieu Ricard once said, that from translating, at least in Tibetan, I don't know in other languages, but he said in the Tibetan language, what we have translated as meditation actually would be more appropriately translated as becoming familiar with. So that's kind of like in the line of taming, of becoming familiar with the mind, becoming familiar with the landscape, becoming familiar with the landscape within and the landscape without. You know, like we were talking about the octopus film. The guy becomes familiar with the landscape. And by becoming familiar with it, he can really see it. He becomes familiar with the wild and then sees clearly. He can see things he never would have seen before. He sees the octopus, right? For those of you who weren't present when we talked about this, doesn't matter. Go see the movie if you can on Netflix, My Octopus Teacher. Fabulous, fabulous film. So yeah. Joe, it looks like he's thinking really hard about something there. Were you going to add something else?
I was thinking of, because you mentioned bringing into being, and that's the Pali word is bhavana, which is really the very important element of the path, the bringing into being, the cultivation of it. When we talk about the cultivation, referring to that term bhavana, which is really literally means to bring into being. So I was thinking about that and how it was relating to dhyana, which is often translated as absorption. That's the Pali word, dhyana, absorption. So I was trying to figure out how can we link that together, absorption and bringing into being. Yeah. This was my...
Well, and that's where translating gets really interesting, because look, so the dhyana word means absorption, but the Chinese translated it as chan, altar, or what did I say? Sacrifice to rivers and mountains. Really interesting, huh? And somehow I sense, that, and this is like, you know, I can't explain it at the moment, I get the link somehow with absorption bringing into being as well. I think that there's, that experientially, it's clear. Intellectually, maybe not. But this practice is not about intellectually making it clear. Eventually, experientially, then we can express it intellectually, when we've experienced it experientially, let's say. So that's a fascinating one. That I had forgotten that dhyana meant, I knew it meant something like that, but absorption. But then the Chinese translate that as altar. The ideogram for altar and sacrifice to rivers and mountains. So then that's another kind of translation too. It's not a word, it's an ideogram. It's a representation of something, which is also very different way of being when language is ideograms. So usually after these talks, we have little exchanges between Lisa and Joe and me or whatever about what title we should give to the talk. And it just occurred to me, maybe we should ask you. Let's try this tonight. We have a few minutes. So anyone have any suggestions for the title for this talk? Lisa has already sent me two, but I won't tell you what they are.
Rivers and mountains.
So Lisa, are you writing these down? Rivers and mountains. Are you writing these down so we can have some? What did you say, Joe, about rivers and mountains? What? We can't hear you.
Sacrifice to rivers and mountains.
Sacrifice. Okay. Sacrifice to rivers and mountains. Any other suggestions? Doesn't have to be like, you know, not really a contest. It's just kind of a brainstorming.
The importance of being Rudy Giuliani.
Interesting one. That's an interesting one. Christine?
What did you say what meditation was, what the word was for meditation in?
Becoming familiar with, I think.
Becoming familiar with.
Okay. Becoming familiar with?
Maybe becoming familiar with rivers and mountains or landscape or all the wildness.
Yeah. Or wildness, yeah, okay. Or like recently we had a talk that the title was the Maradona teaching. So I suppose this could be the Rudy Giuliani teaching in keeping with Debbie's. you know, I mean, we put titles on these, but we don't even know if anyone even looks at them, right? We have no way of knowing if anyone clicks and listens to these talks.
When I can't come, I listen.
You do? Okay, so that yeah. One person does. Tiago too? Okay.
And I look at the titles.
When I was looking for some audios to listen to when I hardly met you, the first time I met you, I listened to most of them, but I went for the titles first.
Ah, that's good to know.
Yeah, if you have a lot, for a whole long time, I didn't think that you registered the talks and that I could go to. And then when I went, there are so many talks that, of course, you have to make some selection and then you look at the title and, that sounds interesting. So
that's why we try to give it a good title, man. For a while, yeah.
Or to recognize better, this one I heard, you know, if it's you remember more if there's something that was in the talk. This one I have listened to. So
the title doesn't matter because the early ones we recorded in Portugal, they only have the date. Yeah. And it's very difficult to track them or go back to that specific one. It's just eight dates, and you kind of go through them until one talk has a title.
Yeah. I think
at the same time, they could all be called the same. They could all have the same title.
They could. And what would that title be?
No title.
Okay. Then we would be back to people confused about so what's this one? What makes this one singular then? That's true though. It's true.
It could be just this is it or just now, always.
Yep. Debbie?
But I'm still stuck back on when you were talking about everything coming up out of this source. What is the importance of Rudy Giuliani? How can that also be coming up out of the source? Because there's a lot of Rudy Giuliani. When you were saying that all this wildness comes up from the source, but that also comes up from the source, or that's a perversion of what comes up from the source.
Well, if we start saying it's a perversion, then we're not in touch with just the, you know, an original source, because we're putting a judgment on it.
Sure.
We could say, however, that it's a deluded manifestation, you know, it's a manifestation of delusion, of not seeing the original oneness or something, because it's going against the wholeness or something. It's going towards separation instead of towards wholeness. You know, the chanting used to, in the original chanting in the morning, there's been, in the Gatha of Atonement, there's been so many versions of it, but one of the really early ones when I started practicing was all twisted karma. No, I think originally it was evil karma.
Evil karma, all evil karma.
And then it became twisted, and then Genpo changed it to twisted because he thought evil was too strong. But even that, you know, that's like perversion, you know, that's the... so now then it's changed to
suffering.
All sufferings, right, ever created by me. Because that's the point, actually. It's the harm and the suffering. Yes, Christine?
There is a study that came to my mind already during your talk. With little babies, 6 months old, and someone shows, or there's a little film that it has repeated a lot of times, where you show little figures, and one is trying to climb a mountain, and then another figure comes and one is helping the figure who wants to, and it can even be only triangles and squares or something. It's really not about the figures. So it can really be abstract, but the baby sees someone struggling who wants to go up on the mountain and another figure coming and help. And then in the next scene, there is someone on top and pushes the other figure down. And at 6 months age, all babies, when after the experiment, they have the choice between the good one who helps and the bad one who pushes back, they all choose the one who helps. Hmm. So you can really say, until 6 months, you're in the wild, you're in this original state of empathy, and babies are naturally empathic. And at already 9 months, so only 3 months later, you have some of the babies choose the one who pushes down. Mm. So the scientists concluded that already at that age, behavior is learned, and if they observe in their environment behavior that takes advantage of others, and this gives yourself an advantage, or some programming like that, will already alter this behavior of the 6 months, where it's where all the babies choose the good guy. And so yeah, it really starts soon. And so it's not a no wonder in what state we are today, the world. I mean, our programming is just, yeah, not very helpful for a just world.
And that's why what we're doing is radical and important.
It doesn't feel always like that, but
you mean it doesn't always feel radical and important?
Yeah. And that it does something, that it contributes to change, although I can observe that it does, but yeah, it's like the story with the girl picking up the jellyfish, or what is it? And puts
starfish. Yeah.
Starfish, and puts them back in the sea. It's just, yeah, those little drops where you can't really see the difference that it makes for the whole. Mm. But I like to imagine it as a that every thought counts, and that we all influence the whole with what we think, and that if so, then everything has its importance to this collective energy that is around in this world.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Because we all are one, and therefore it does make a difference. Yeah. It's 9:30, we have to stop. Go to the website soon and you'll see what the chosen title is. Thank you. And so next Thursday will be our last Thursday of the year. And then I think we start up again the 7th, the first Thursday after the holidays.
But we start on Monday, on the 4th, right?
I mean, in terms of Thursday.
On Thursday, yeah.